where Norwalk comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. Joining us now is Gretchen Carlson, who lives in Greenwich, or at least last time I checked, lived in Greenwich. Gretchen Carlson, welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. Former Miss America, former Fox and Friends host, fantastic violinist and mom and wife and all that good stuff. And now you can add very successful political activist to your resume. Welcome.
Thanks, Lisa. Yes, it's been a surreal week, capping off a surreal last 5.5 years.
Well, I know, because I was at the start of your journey. You remember you were on our show a couple of times talking about it. I remember when it all went down and you said that you were committed to seeing actual policy change as a result of your experience. So let's refresh our own audience. Tell us why you got into this fight.
Yeah, so I had something in my employment contract, which millions of people in our country, currently 60 million Americans, have in their contracts, but they probably don't even know it. And it's called an arbitration clause. And what that means is that you don't have a choice. It's a forced arbitration clause. You do not have a choice if something bad happens to you at work about being able to go to an open jury process or filing a public lawsuit. You instead have to go to forced arbitration, which is a secret chamber. People should understand that arbitration, like you hear about it in sports and all, it's totally different. In this case, forced arbitration is not a jury of your peers. It's an arbitrator who tends to be a retired judge or lawyer. So, you know, pretty much an older person in their 70s or 80s. You don't get the same amount of witnesses or depositions. There are no appeals. It's secret. And so you get pushed out of the workforce for simply coming forward and having the courage. Nobody ever knows what happened to you. And the perpetrator mainly gets to stay on the job because nobody knows about it. And this is the cycle that has been going on for the last 40 to 50 years. And I realized after my case, I had an arbitration clause. And that was a dark day when my lawyers told me, you don't have a case, Gretchen. And that is why we sued Roger Ailes at Fox News personally, because we were trying to circumvent being thrown into arbitration. So, Lisa, arguably, we wouldn't even be in this movement right now if I had been forced into arbitration and into secrecy. And that is what's happening to millions of people across the country.
So you're saying that because you picked, because you forced Roger Ailes to defend himself individually as opposed to the arbitration clause with Fox News, that was a wedge that enabled you to get out from under it. But most people don't have that wedge.
Exactly. And I still probably would have been forced into arbitration had the case continued on and not resolved, because we were arguing that he technically had not signed my employment contract, which was the other loophole. And so there was a law on the books in New York for us to be able to sue him for a human rights violation, which not every state has. Mm. So, yeah, you know, the fate just happened to be on my side after that dark day of finding out what the arbitration clause meant. And look, you know, I'm a highly educated person, and I knew that they stuffed this arbitration clause in my last contract at Fox, but even I did not understand the negative ramifications of what that meant for a case I was already thinking about. And so that is how employees have been fooled, for lack of a better term, over the years, because who knows on their first day of work? First of all, nobody's looking at what they're signing, right? And who knows that they're going to have a problem on their first day of work? You're just happy to get a paycheck and go to your job.
Well, so, and let me just put my lawyer Lisa hat on, which is, and I've talked about arbitration often because I don't like, I'm a mediator, I'm a professional mediator, I do it pro bono for the probate court system all the time, and I love mediation. It's very different than arbitration. People use those words intermingling. It's a very different process. And arbitration is not just in employment contracts, but it's for every one of us that has a securities account. If we ever have a problem with our broker, or they've stolen money, or they've been a problem gambler, or somebody's done something terrible, we all have to go into arbitration about our money. The thing about arbitration, which people, you are 100% right, Gretchen Carlson, about this, is, and that people don't even understand, is that arbitrators technically don't even have to follow the law. They're supposed to, and we assume that they will. But their decisions are only appealable as to process and procedure. They're not appealable as to whether or not they applied the law properly in that case, the way a trial judge's decision is appealable to an appellate court if they have misapplied the law. So that means that the arbitrators, who typically get paid from the people that give them a lot of cases, which is never the individual fighting, it's always the company that's defending, they have an interest to protect in their living, which is why I personally believe it's a corrupt system. My personal
belief.
It
totally is. It's stacked against you from, and thank you for your legal hat. You know, I did take my LSATs, and I did want to go to law school,
but I
never made it.
You would have been great.
I ended up in TV. I feel like after everything I've gone through over the last 5 years, I'm like a half lawyer.
Yeah, I bet you are.
But thank you for that assessment.
Yeah. I mean, this is why, I mean, it's rife with abuse in all areas, but particularly when it comes to sexual harassment. So I want to ask you something, Gretchen Carlson. What does the new law provide?
Yeah, so this is something I started working on right away then. After I realized harassment in the workplace was an epidemic, I then realized that forced arbitration was an epidemic of its own. And I started walking the halls of Congress. And I was like, we got to do something about this. And I knew it had to be bipartisan because that's the only way that stuff gets done after covering politics for the last 30 years. I understood that. And so I got Republican Senator and Democratic Senator, Republican Graham and Senator Gillibrand, to come together to be the co-sponsors in the Senate, and then same thing in the House. And we first introduced this legislation to not force women into arbitration at the end of 2017. But then, you know, there were a lot of other shenanigans going on in Washington and other things, and so it didn't really get a lot of movement. But we reintroduced it in July of this past year, and it really started to move swiftly then. And I think a lot of the reason why is because, you know, a couple of years had passed, the movement was still going on. I noticed a tonal shift when I would meet with members of Congress, especially Republicans who tended not to be on board with this. And I got a lot of them to change their minds. And for example, the main person in the House, Representative Ken Buck from Colorado, voted against this bill the first time around. I got him to change his mind in September, and not only did he change his mind, but he decided to be a champion of it and helped him get other Republicans in the House. And last Monday night, when this actually went to the House floor, which was such an emotional experience for me, we got 113 Republicans to vote for this. And so there were more that voted for it than against it, and it was a massive bipartisan victory. And then it went to the Senate on Thursday. I had my 10 Republicans that I needed. I had been working on this for the last years. And so I knew that it was going to pass if it actually could make it to the floor. And, you know, I'm making it sound like this is just like 1, 2, 3, and then it happens. This has been an arduous 5-year journey. And I guess I could write a book about how difficult it is to pass legislation, but completely overjoyed that this moment finally happened. And, it's not about me. It's about all the people that it's going to help moving forward.
So does the new law mean that that an employer of any size can no longer put a forced arbitration clause in an employment contract? What does the new law say?
Yeah, so this is just a slice of the pie. You know, at my nonprofit, Lift Our Voices, we believe that all disenfranchised groups should not be forced into arbitration. So that would include gender, race, LGBTQ+ discrimination. But this is just a slice of the pie for harassment and assault. So current contracts, if you have an arbitration clause and you're experiencing harassment or assault, it's not like we're going to rip up your contract or the company is going to, but you now need to have the knowledge that this law is on the books and you can't be forced into arbitration. So trust me, lawyers will become up to speed on this. General counsel will become up to speed on this. I'm sure there's been a flurry of activity in corporations all across America when this passed last Thursday, because they are going to have to be advising their companies about how they can no longer.
So if you believe there's behavior in your workplace that rises to the level of sexual harassment or sexual assault, then that claim you cannot be forced into arbitration for. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct. But it's just a bite of the apple.
Right.
And I will tell you that you know, look, some people were critical and said, well, you know, why don't you just go for the whole shebang? Because it would never have passed.
No, you have to go for incremental change. It's the right way to do it. You can't lift the whole boulder at once. You've got to chip away. And that's the most effective advocacy there is, Gretchen Carlson. You've got to chip away.
Yeah. So that was the goal. You know, we accomplished that. But I will tell you that at this major press conference in the Senate chamber Thursday, that immediately afterwards, reporters were asking, well, what's next? And there were members of Congress from both sides of the aisle that said they would be willing to sit down and talk about more.
Exactly.
So, you know, as these movements continue, you know, look, like the BLM movement, like, do you think it's going to be fair now if you're racially discriminated against at work that people who are harassed or assaulted can get out of the secret chamber, but you can't?
Exactly.
I mean, this is going to start, I think, a little bit of a momentum.
Mm-hmm. That's how you chip away.
Especially in an employee market. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, you know, I don't believe anyone should be silenced when something bad happens to you. And so that's what I'm working on to try and change next.
So let me ask you something, because there was a flip side of this. I had Gloria Allred on the show a couple of years ago. We're chatting with Gretchen Carlson. And Gloria Allred is one of the most dynamic and has one of the most storied careers in the country in terms of advocating for women. But she actually was on my show, and she was worried about this bill because she felt that the women that she represented did well by secret arbitration, because the quid pro quo for silence was a higher amount of money. And she felt that this might be a disincentive to higher awards. What's your response to that?
I know Gloria well. I think she actually came around to support this legislation.
Good.
But she is against. But she's against getting rid of NDAs, and she and I disagree.
Ah,
because,
okay.
Look, she's a lawyer because she wants the NDAs, because she wants to get a big settlement, because she gets, you know, 23% of that or whatever she gets. I'm trying to change the whole culture of the way we handle this inside the workplace. So, for example, when a woman comes forward and says that this has happened to her, she shouldn't immediately be a pariah and be gotten rid of in the workplace. Instead, we need to have leaders, which mostly are still men, to be educated on this and to be respectful of somebody who comes forward, and to actually get to the bottom of it and not get rid of the woman, but get rid of the bad apple who's perpetrating this. And don't put her over to HR, where immediately she's a troublemaker, and send her over to the secret chamber, never to be heard from ever again. Now she never works again. And you just continue the vicious cycle. I'm trying to change the way we handle this as well in the workplace, so that we actually celebrate people who have the courage to come forward, do an independent investigation. If the person's telling the truth, she gets to keep working. I mean, that's all that women want to do anyway. Get rid of the bad apple, move forward. Now, guess what you don't need? You don't need arbitration, NDAs, lawyers, settlements. You see, we keep looking at this from a bass-ackwards way, and we keep thinking, oh, we got to do this old-school system of hiring a lawyer and getting a settlement, and then the woman never works again.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to try and change. And so my organization is trying to change the way we approach this as well. And that's going to also be tough to chip away at. But we're working on it. And we're not going away.
Well, you know, Gretchen, you're reminding me of a case of a fact pattern that just broke this week or last week in our own area in Fairfield, Connecticut. There's a woman police officer who founded within the Fairfield Police the first domestic violence kind of subgroup to investigate domestic violence cases in Fairfield. And it turns out that there was a complaint lodged against a fellow police officer. And so she's been investigating this. Do you know that she has been removed from her post, even though she's been doing this for 25 years? And she says that they're punishing her because she's getting too close to investigating a fellow police officer who was accused of domestic violence.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all, unfortunately. This is what I'm talking about. I mean, I did a whole documentary a few years ago about women like that, and this sounds exactly like a story about a firefighter in Virginia. Yeah, I mean, this is how we still culturally treat people who are, in her case, just trying to do the right thing.
She's just doing her job, for God's sakes. She's literally doing her job, and she was removed from the post of investigating any domestic violence, and she says that's why.
This is what this is what we've been covering up, and if the one biggest thing I've learned over the last 5 years is sunshine illuminates everything.
Yes.
And until we start shining the light yes. and having discussions about this in an open way, we are not going to solve it.
Illuminates and disinfects.
Exactly.
Illuminates and I'm always a big believer. Sunshine is the best disinfectant. I'm with you about this. What I've never liked about arbitration is, first of all, as a lawyer, I never liked that they didn't have to follow the law. That just, I can't stand that. But I also, the secrecy is such a problem because think about it. The alternative is a judge and a jury, and it's the way we always think about justice. And then all of these people are compelled, and the only interaction they're going to ever have in their life with the so-called justice system is the antithesis of what they were learning about the American system of justice, which is in an open forum with the judge and jury. It's the opposite.
Exactly. Yeah, you're exactly right. And another really important point, which I know you'll understand as a lawyer, is we lost years of legal precedent.
Yes.
Because all of these cases were going to arbitration. So there's, you know how we see all these legal shows and everyone says, well, you know, they refer back to such and such case, right?
Right.
And that's how they build their current case. Well, we have none of that for any of these kinds of cases, whether it's, you know, gender discrimination, race discrimination, or harassment. That's been lost.
You know,
in arbitration.
It has. And that's a really good point. And another really good point is that the way that arbitration became something that was codified in the law that judges originally said was OK is because it was based on the premise that people have equal bargaining power in a contract. And that is another fallacy. Because as you started out saying, when you get a job, it's like that classic. I talk about this scene all the time in Defending Your Life with Albert Brooks. And he's talking to himself in a mirror about how he's going to have the courage to really negotiate for a salary increase. When he gets this new job, he's going to have a better increase. And of course, as soon as he meets his new employer and he goes, $50,000, take it or leave it. He goes, I'll take it. Because that's most people, Gretchen. They take it and they
right.
sign on the dotted line. There's no such thing as equal bargaining power when you're getting a new job. You're so happy to get the job.
Right. And if you happen to say anything about what's in the contract, there's 50 people standing behind you who will take the
That's
job.
Right.
So, you know, that's the other problem with it. And by the way, arbitration was originally intended to unclog the court system because there were just so many cases. But it was the original intent was not for human rights violations. It mm-hmm. was like for if my neighbor broke down my fence and, you know, we didn't want to clog the court system for $300, right?
And you mutually agreed that you would handle it that way as an equal bargaining
right.
supposition. That's right. That's
right.
why I think
exactly.
it's terrible in the securities area, too. Because in the securities area, if I want to open an account with whoever, I got to sign all these things in the tiny, tiny, tiny print just to be able to have my money in stocks. So how is that equal bargaining power? What do I have? I mean, that's, yeah.
It's true for when you sign a phone contract. It's true for
that's
when
right.
you buy a new refrigerator.
That's right.
You know, it's everywhere now. And so, you know, again, that's a much bigger discussion about mm-hmm. whether or not all of that should be eliminated. But, you know, my main focus currently has just been on the human rights violation side of it.
Well, you start with the strongest and the most compelling argument is the fact pattern of women that have sexual harassment and all kind of things happening to them at the workplace, and they have to lose their voice as a result of speaking out. So you start with the strongest argument, then you chip away at ultimately what this procedure is about. You put a magnifying glass on the whole thing.
Exactly. And you know, when this really sort of, this is my own personal understanding of how arbitration became so rampant, but I think it's important to point out is that in 1991, only 2% of corporate America forced their workers into arbitration. But by 2024, 84% of all employees will be forced into
That's
arbitration.
That's astonishing.
It's astonishing. Now, why? Why
Lawyers.
1991?
Lawyers.
But what else happened in 1991? Anita Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Anita Hill testified on
yeah.
Capitol Hill, and every company, I think, instead of saying, wow, we better figure out how to fix this problem, a lot of them thought, how are we going to cover this up? We can't have an Anita Hill. And that's when arbitration started to explode.
Wow.
So, you know, I think that that's a very interesting tie in all the work that I've done of this over the last 5 years and the research. And and with this legislation is that, to me, signifies what happened and this explosive growth of trying to hide wrongdoing in the workplace.
Congratulations, Gretchen Carlson, and thank you. Congratulations and thank you. Congratulations
thank you.
On this, you know, which is your own success, but, you know, you're working on behalf of us. And so we want to thank you. And I think it's fantastic that you were able to persuade so many Republicans who traditionally are reserved about anything that might impact big business. And I think it's a credit to your persuasiveness and to the cause that people were so open-minded about this. So it's good.
Well, thank you. And if people want more information about my organization, it's liftourvoices.org.
Liftourvoices.org. Gretchen Carlson on the Lisa Wexler Show. Thank you so much. You're still living in Greenwich. How's your family?
Everyone's great.
Good.
Yep, I'm still here.
Good. Kids are growing up, huh?
They are. I've got a freshman in college and a junior in high school. So.
I know. It happens so
exciting
fast.
Exciting time.
I know it does. Yeah. Thanks, Gretchen. You be well. Thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.